This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
You're a small to mid-sized business with 300 to 3,000 employees. You face the same network security challenges as big businesses do, but can't support a big IT investment, leaving your doors open to advanced cyber threats. Barracuda Next Generation Firewalls provide all the core features of enterprise firewalls and UTMs, but without hidden costs and deployment hurdles, making owning a big business firewall no big deal for your SMB. Reclaim your network. Try a Barracuda Next Gen Firewall risk-free at barracuda.com/firewalls.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Tentative budget pact in D.C. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. It is Tuesday, October 27th. Glad you're with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
The White House and congressional leaders have reached a preliminary agreement on a two-year spending plan. Find out what's needed for it to pass.
She was suicidal. That's what the woman charged with driving her car into a homecoming parade at Oklahoma State University has told police.
And sports, game one of the World Series tonight in Kansas City between the Mets and Royals. First pitch is 8 o'clock Eastern time.
And the changes you'll see in Walmart supercenters thanks to slowing sales.
So they're decluttering aisles, widening aisles, shrinking shelves in some cases, so that you can see across the store and it feels nice and clean. But that means less space for some of the companies, the thousands of companies that sell their products in Walmart.
Wall Street Journal reporter Sarah Nassauer on Walmart changes, which are squeezing big and small suppliers, by the way. She's here in about 20 minutes. So the White House and congressional leaders reached a tentative budget deal. It's a two-year plan that would also raise the federal debt limit. We get more from this morning's Mike Gavin.
The deal is designed to do two main things. Number one, eliminate the risk that the government might default on its debt. And two, minimize the prospect of a partial government shutdown in December. It would suspend the debt limit until March of 2017 and boost spending by $80 billion through September of 2017. If approved by Congress, the agreement would allow House Speaker John Boehner to complete two difficult fiscal issues before he resigns later this week. If it fails, it could leave the government a week away from potentially being unable to pay all its bills. Gordon.
Thank you, Mike. On November 3rd, by the way, the Treasury will exhaust emergency cash management measures that it has used since March if the debt limit is not increased. Congress, meantime, faces a December 11th deadline when funding for the government runs out. House Speaker John Boehner is slated to leave office this Friday, setting up a busy legislative week. He's trying to complete as many items on his to-do list before he hands things over to his likely successor, Congressman Paul Ryan of Wisconsin. More now from Daniel Neuhauser, staff correspondent at National Journal. He joins us on the T-Mobile hotline. Dan, what about Mr. Boehner's to-do list?
Well, you know, I think ideally he'd like to take care of all of it. But you got to remember he's sort of hamstrung by the fact that many of the members of his conference have, no confidence in him as their lead negotiator, and President Barack Obama and the Democrats have also no desire to negotiate with Boehner because they don't think that he can deliver votes on his end. So I think what we're looking at, best case, is we're going to see probably the beginnings of a highway deal coming together, but more than likely we're going to see a short-term extension of the current highway bill to give negotiators, you know, maybe another 3 weeks to a month to get everything together. We will see the Export-Import Bank sort of taken out of the hands of leadership and brought up by a group of Republicans and Democrats who banded together to take this upon themselves.
Wow. All right. So have these items now become kind of a personal mission for Mr. Boehner, or is he actually really trying to do the government's business here?
I think it's not necessarily personal. I think it's more institutional. He doesn't want to leave the new speaker, who's probably going to be Paul Ryan, with a bunch of stuff left to take care of that should have been done before. And I think another part of that is that a lot of the Republican members, particularly the conservatives of the House Freedom Caucus, are really unhappy about a lot of the things that are going to happen this week. And for Paul Ryan to come on the job and the first act in his first week would be to do all these things that the Freedom Caucus hate, that would really kind of make the rest of his life difficult. So I think a lot of this is kind of you know, clearing the decks for whoever's going to be up next so he can have, you know, a clean start, a clean slate.
We're speaking with Daniel Neuhauser, staff correspondent at National Journal. His piece is called "Can Boehner Clean the Barn Before He Goes?" My goodness. What might be the easiest thing to get done this week?
Well, probably the easiest thing, oddly enough, would be electing Paul Ryan Speaker. it's, you know, the Republican conference has been, you know, really racking its brain trying to figure out how to move forward, you know, since Boehner announced his resignation. But I think that the door has really opened for Paul Ryan in the last week. He's been sitting down, having meetings with all different sort of factions of the Republican conference. And it looks right now like he's going to have a pretty easy vote, maybe even as many as 230 members out of the 247 Republicans. And, you know, I got to say, in this day and age, that's about as close to a unanimous vote as you're going to get in that conference.
Yeah. Thanks, Dan. Dan Neuhauser, staff correspondent at National Journal. By the way, Paul Ryan has reportedly already scheduled a House Speaker's victory party on Thursday night, and no votes haven't even been cast yet. Officials in South Asia say more than 300 people are now dead in Pakistan, Afghanistan, and India following a strong earthquake. CNN reports that the panic in itself was deadly. In one northern Afghan town, 12 schoolgirls died in a stampede as they tried to evacuate their school during the quake. The girls between 10 and 15 years old were crushed in their school's stairwell between the first and second floors. The shaking was felt hundreds of miles away, by the way, in New Delhi, India. White House Press Secretary Josh Earnest, meanwhile, offered condolences and help.
U.S. government has been in touch with the governments in Afghanistan and Pakistan, and we stand ready to provide any additional support that may be needed.
The epicenter of the earthquake near the Afghan city of Jharm is a rural and sparsely populated area with mud brick buildings prone to collapsing. Now, the magnitude 7.5 earthquake was similar to one in nearby Kashmir that killed more than 70,000 people back in 2005. But unlike that one 10 years ago, which was fairly shallow, yesterday's happened 139 miles below the surface of the earth. The U.S. Navy has flexed its biceps in the South China Sea, sending a guided missile destroyer close to China's man-made islands in the disputed waters. That drew an angry rebuke from Beijing. The patrol by the USS Lawson was the most significant U.S. challenge yet to 12 nautical mile territorial limits that China claims and could raise tensions in one of the world's busiest sea lanes. A defense official told Reuters that this would be the first in a series of exercises called Freedom of Navigation, which are aimed at testing China's territorial claims. White House spokesman Josh Earnest said the U.S. has made it clear to China the importance of free flow of commerce in the South China Sea, where $5 trillion of world trade passes every year. Beijing, by the way, began building the reefs up at the end of 2013. China claims most of the South China Sea, but Vietnam, Malaysia, Brunei, the Philippines, and Taiwan also have claims there. 14 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Reminder, by the way, that we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter with the handle at This Morning Show. You can follow me directly on Twitter with the handle at Gordon Deal.
In 2001, Vonage revolutionized home phone service with voice over internet. After such a colossal breakthrough, who would have objected if Vonage said, "Enjoy better, world. Vonage will be spending some me time at the spa." But the thing about better is, there's always more better. So today, Vonage is not at the spa having its trouble area worked on by a masseuse named Moonshadow, but with its nose to the grindstone, transforming communications for your business by making it better. With a cloud-based infrastructure that grows as your business grows, seamless mobility between all devices so you don't miss that important call, even while Moonshadow is walking down your spine. And all for less than you think. So while you're getting your mani-pedi, Vonage's toenails remain a complete disaster, because Vonage is still out there working to make more better. See how your business can get the better it deserves. Call Vonage at 1-800-5-VONAGE or go to Vonage.com. Vonage, the business of better.
Thanks for spending time with us. Good Tuesday morning. The woman accused of driving her car into a crowd watching Oklahoma State University's homecoming parade has told police she was suicidal. 25-year-old Adacia Chambers is being held on four preliminary counts of second-degree murder. In connection with Saturday's incident, four people were killed, dozens more injured. Ms. Chambers also told police she had been treated for mental health-related issues in the past. Her father is Floyd Chambers.
She may have problems, underlying problems that I wasn't fully aware of, but we're going to address that, and we're going to look into the situation and see what was going through her mind that morning.
Bail was set at $1 million during a hearing yesterday. Her attorney, Tony Coleman, said he was not sure if his client is aware that she's in jail and that she had yet to ask to see her parents or boyfriend.
I mentioned to her yet again that there were people that actually died in this incident, and her face was unmoved, unchanged, no sign of emotion.
Police are awaiting blood tests, by the way, to determine whether she was impaired by drugs or alcohol. 20 minutes now after the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koschenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, Congress is moving closer to averting a government shutdown and preventing a first-ever default. House Republican leaders in the White House struck a budget deal just before midnight, which would increase the federal borrowing limit and give both the Pentagon and domestic agencies 2 years of budget relief in exchange for cuts elsewhere. Authorities in Pakistan and neighboring Afghanistan intensified rescue and relief operations today in rugged earthquake-affected areas as the death toll rises above 300. Teams are transporting tents, medicines, and other items to quake-hit areas. The quake damaged nearly 2,000 homes. A Richland County, South Carolina school resource officer has been placed on administrative duty following an incident at a high school that was captured on video and circulated on social media sites. The video purports to show the officer forcibly removing a young woman from her desk and the room. Lieutenant Curtis Wilson of the County Sheriff's Department says Deputy Ben Fields will not be back at any school pending the results of an investigation.
The SROs at the schools, they're there for the safety of all students. The SROs are also held at a very high standard.
In the video, an officer can be seen grabbing the student out of her desk, causing the chair to flip over. Once the student's on the ground, the officer can be seen grabbing her and dragging her for several feet. Here's something you won't want to hear if you're facing surgery. In a new study on how often medication errors occur, Harvard researchers say mistakes were made during almost half of the operations they analyzed. The mistakes included drug labeling errors, incorrect dosing, drug documentation mistakes, and/or failing to properly treat changes in a patient's vital signs during surgery. Almost 80% of the events were determined to have been preventable. And Cleveland's quest to celebrate the city's first pro sports title since 1964, maybe about 8 months away. It all starts again tonight when LeBron James and the Cavaliers tip off the NBA season at the Chicago Bulls. James nearly carried the Cavs to the top in his first season back in Ohio, but they came up 2 wins shy of last season's championship.
Boy, that's a very optimistic outlook there. Is that, are you spinning that? LeBron James's year.
Hey, he came awfully close with a lot of injuries last year.
He did. If he wasn't the only guy on the floor, too, they might
have
done it.
Exactly. Maybe this year's the year.
Put five guys out there, Cleveland. 22 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. You may soon notice changes to your local Walmart Supercenter thanks to slower sales and lower profits. For one, it has about 2,500 fewer items than last year. Wall Street Journal reporter Sarah Nassauer has a look at the changes taking place within the world's largest retailer, which has made things difficult for suppliers. Sarah, what are we looking at?
Yeah, Walmart is in a tricky spot right now. They're spending a lot of money to boost e-commerce sales and to make stores better, you know, more pleasant, cleaner, less cluttered, make sure shelves are stocked. That's sort of retail 101. If you want to sell something, it has to be on the shelf. But while they're doing that, they have to try to increase sales. So they're spending a lot of time figuring out how they can change the store to make it something that more people want to shop at. They've been a bit stuck in a rut where they have about, you know, less than 1% same store sales going on 4 quarters now. And they're a huge company, so that's big, but it's not enough. So they're decluttering aisles, widening aisles, shrinking shelves in some cases so that you can see across the store and it feels nice and clean. But that means less space for some of suppliers, some of the companies, the thousands of companies that sell their products in Walmart.
All right. Like who? Which vendor might be taking a hit here?
Well, there's lots of folks, you know, some of the big consumer packaged good companies, I'm sure, are thinking about it. But also smaller companies, because, you know, they might sell in just one part of the store. You know, for example, Popcorn Indiana, you know, these red popcorn bags you might know from your shopping trip. Okay. they, you know, they're selling in one part of the store. So if Walmart takes away some display space or, you know, widens an aisle and takes out a big pallet, one of those pallets that sort of piled high with stuff, yeah, and it's their products, that's a big hit. They can't go over to the refrigerated section and say, well, our sales are good there and are kind of counteracting it. So some of these smaller companies that sell in one spot might be hardest hit.
Wow. All right. So if you are that company, you have to say, whoa, we move a lot of product in your store. Like, you have to have some sort of pushback argument, I guess.
Yeah. Or, you know, you try to boost sales elsewhere in different retailers, or you come up with a product that's so great that Walmart wants to give it more space. So you have to, you know, step up your game. You know, Walmart is cutting down on the amount of products that they sort of move through their system in multiple ways. One is, yeah, getting rid of display space, widening aisles, lowering shelves, and just having less product in certain cases in some parts of the store. They're also have cut back on inventory. So, you know, that's a temporary thing, but when the retailer cuts back in inventory, they're buying less from the supplier that quarter, and so that can be a rough patch to get through for the supplier.
Right. All right. So a lot of pressure on the e-commerce side of things too, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's what this is about. It's Walmart is a huge almost half a trillion dollars in revenue retailer, the largest in the world, and their model is supercenters. It's been that way for decades now. That's how they make the profit. That's where they've grown, and that's starting to not work as well as it used to. And so they're investing billions of dollars and trying to beat Amazon, basically.
Thanks, Sarah. Wall Street Journal reporter Sarah Nassauer. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Coming up next, the problems for Russian jets in Syria. Getting your mailing and shipping done can seem like a no-win situation. First, going to the post office takes up valuable time, and leasing a postage meter is expensive with multi-year commitments and hidden fees. Luckily, there's a better way. Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package right from your desk using your own computer and printer. Even get special postage discounts you can't find at the post office. Plus, Stamps.com is more powerful than a postage meter at just a fraction of the cost. You can save at least 50% compared to a postage meter, and you'll avoid those time-consuming trips to the post office. Right now, sign up for Stamps.com and use my last name, Deal, for this special offer. A 4-week trial plus a $110 bonus offer, including postage and a digital scale. Don't wait. Go to Stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Deal. That's Stamps.com. Enter Deal. Well, the Russians may not have finished their homework before rushing to support Syrian strongman Bashar al-Assad. A senior U.S. defense official tells USA Today that Russian warplanes sent to Syria are breaking down at a rapid rate that appears to be affecting their ability to strike targets. Pentagon correspondent Tom Vandenbroek has the exclusive story. Tom, how many planes are impacted?
Well, they've got close to 40 jets in total there, so you can do the math. It's a fair number, and it doesn't stack up well with what the U.S. Air Force expects its planes to be flying at as far as a mission-capable rate. When they're deployed, it's about 90%. 90% of the planes are capable of flying missions.
Oh, wow. All right, so did the U.S. make adjustments those 25 years ago when they encountered these conditions?
Yeah, there are lots of different things that they learned, how and when to change air filters, that sort of thing, and when to fly and when not to fly as well.
Wow, meaning what? Like, daytime is worse because it's dustier? Or?
Well, I'm not really sure about that, if that's any different, but there are certain conditions they won't fly in. I don't know if the Russians are doing that. One major advantage the Russians have, and what makes these statistics even more telling, is they don't have to fly very far on their bombing runs. U.S. aircraft have to fly about 1,000 miles for a sortie, and the Russians only have to fly about 50, basically just off the runway, and they're dropping their bombs. And they're still having troubles keeping those planes in the air.
Got it. All right, so it's the transport planes and the fighter jets that are having these issues?
Yep, that's pretty much everything they've got there.
Yeah. Wow. All right, so are they making adjustments, or are they having second thoughts about what they're doing?
I haven't heard anything about that. I think they're pretty well committed. They've sent in a couple thousand Marines and ground personnel to try to, you know, make their presence there more or less permanent. So they're going to continue to fly there, and I assume they'll learn some of the lessons that U.S. pilots learned long ago.
Yeah. Wow. We're speaking with Tom Vandenbroek, Pentagon correspondent at USA Today. His piece is called Harsh Conditions Are Foiling Russian Jets in Syria. All right. What about long-term impacts on equipment or personnel or budget, I guess, too?
Well, I would think that, you know, again, we talked about how they may learn some lessons, but I've also heard from sources in the Middle East that the equipment they're using just isn't that good. Even the newer stuff, they have an attack plane called the Fullback, and it's one of its first deployed missions, and it's not doing that well, as I'm told. So some of their equipment may not stand up even after they've figured out, you know, how to deal with some of these conditions. And they fired about, I think it was 26 cruise missiles from the Caspian Sea into Syria a couple weeks back, and 15% of those ended up falling short in Iran. So that was one of their newer weapons. And again, that's not a very good rate. So that some of their hardware just may not be up to the task.
Wow. All right, so you make an interesting comparison in your story, too. You say for U.S. warplanes, readiness rates of less than 80% would attract attention from top brass. So the standards are a little different?
The standards are quite different. I mean, as I said before, but you would expect about 90% of the attack aircraft to be ready at any given time. And once it gets around 80%, then you're going to have generals breathing down your neck to make sure that you get your rates up.
All right. Thanks, Tom. Tom Vandenbroek, Pentagon correspondent at USA Today. 21 minutes now before the hour. On This Morning, America's First News.
You're a small to mid-sized business with 300 to 3,000 employees. You face the same network security challenges as big businesses do, but can't support a big IT investment, leaving your doors open to advanced cyber threats. Barracuda Next Generation Firewalls provide all the core features of enterprise firewalls and UTMs, but without hidden costs and deployment hurdles, making owning a big business firewall no big deal for your SMB. Reclaim your network. Try a Barracuda Next Gen Firewall risk-free at barracuda.com/firewalls.
Hey, don't forget, by the way, if you miss a day of the program, you can hear back podcasts of it on our website, which is thismorningwithgordondeal.com. Also on apps like TuneIn, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and iTunes. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, another day, Gordon, another warning for people to stop taking dangerous selfies. Today, it's Britain's Network Rail who is pleading with residents to stop taking train track selfies after a camera captured 8 dangerous incidents in a single day. The incidents included people taking selfies on the tracks, parents taking pictures of kids sitting on the tracks, and a group of people spending more than 8 minutes chatting while standing in the path used by trains, just standing around shooting the breeze.
Hey, let's stand over here.
Yeah.
Right? It makes perfect sense.
Perfect spot.
Okay, you put your foot on that rail.
Right.
I'll stand on this rail. And then the third person, just sit down on the railroad ties.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And one of us will certainly hear a train come by. Right.
Oh, and the fourth person needs to put their ear to the metal rail like they used to do in the old days to hear if a train is approaching.
A man named Martin Brown, the operations risk advisor for Network Rail, said something that should be obvious to all of us but apparently needs some repeating. Quote, crossings in rural picturesque settings may look like good opportunities for a photo, but the railway is not a playground.
Yes.
And that says a lot, by the way, when you have a person who is the operations risk advisor.
Love
like,
that.
I feel like this is something that he spends his days going over almost every day. Not just selfies, but just people being dangerous around tracks in general.
Let's get an earful from the operations risk advisor. There's a shark in the water. Go in or not? No.
No.
Selfies on the train tracks, yes or no? No.
Well, I'm assuming his paychecks get cashed, so that's all he cares about. And Gordon, in what may have looked like a deleted scene from the upcoming Star Wars movie, Chewbacca was arrested in Ukraine for supporting Darth Vader. Now, before you get worried that Chewie has betrayed Han Solo and turned to the dark side, you should know that this was all an Election Day stunt. In Odessa, Ukraine, Vader, Chewbacca, and other Star Wars characters have been waging write-in campaigns in local elections as part of the Internet Party of Ukraine, which has been active for a few years. Witnesses recorded video of the man in the Chewbacca costume being arrested for allegedly violating campaign laws by campaigning at a polling place on Election Day. The man was fined only about $8, and his arrest comes just days after the city of Odessa unveiled a statue of Darth Vader created from a statue of communist leader Vladimir Lenin.
Jeez.
So the force is obviously very strong in Odessa,
You're not
Ukraine.
Kidding me.
You think we're crazy about Star Wars here? I think things are going to leave them crazier over there.
Oh my goodness. That was a funny picture of him in the the paper that I saw.
Oh, like, yeah.
With the costume on.
Right.
In a courtroom. Right? Or wherever he was being held.
Right.
Like, they don't make you take the headpiece off for those pictures?
Yeah. That is a little odd. I think they would definitely make you do that here. But it's interesting because I guess we have similar laws here, right? You're not allowed to campaign at a polling place on election day.
In a Chewbacca costume.
Well, in any costume. But, yeah, especially in a Chewbacca costume.
But if you are speaking Chewbacca, are you technically campaigning?
Right. How do they understand you?
Or are they, yeah.
Right. Unless Han Solo is standing right next to you to translate. How? Right. How do they understand you?
I just speak Wookiee. Very good. 14 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. So you may have heard the World Health Organization declare that there is now enough evidence to say that processed meats like bacon cause cancer. Sausage, other cured delicacies on the list. But a common reaction so far has been to call bacon the new smoking. Tech Insider says, no, not the case. Yes, bacon is now on the list of known human carcinogens, along with tobacco, asbestos, plutonium. Once there's enough evidence, right, it should be on the list. Alcoholic beverages has been on that list since 2012. But being on the list doesn't mean they all automatically cause cancer. Exposure to the sun's UV rays can cause cancer, but doesn't always do so. It depends on the dose and other factors. Eating an additional 50 grams of processed meat per day increases your risk of colorectal cancer by 18%. The researchers say eating processed meats probably causes 34,000 people to die of cancer around the world every year. Smoking, however, kills 1 million people each year. 8 minutes before the hour now on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
Tornado rescuers are struggling to reach quake-stricken regions in Pakistan and Afghanistan as the combined death toll from yesterday's earthquake rises above 300. Afghan authorities are struggling to reach the hardest-hit areas near the epicenter of the 7.5 magnitude quake. The woman who crashed into a crowd at Oklahoma State University's homecoming parade, killing four people and injuring dozens more, is being held on $1 million bond. As her father acknowledged, she might have some mental health issues.
She may have problems, underlying problems that I wasn't fully aware of, but we're going to address that, and we're going to look into the situation and see what was going through her mind that morning.
25-year-old Adesha Chambers is being held on suspicion of second-degree murder and driving under the influence after she plowed her car into spectators at the Stillwater event Saturday. Investigators are still trying to figure out what caused a whale-watching boat with 27 people on board to capsize off Vancouver Island Sunday afternoon. Five British nationals were killed, and an Australian man is still missing. Canada's lead safety investigator, Marc Puisson, says all avenues will be probed.
We're going to examine the maintenance history of the vessel. We're going to review the operation of the equipment. We're going to review operational policies. And even we're going to examine the regulatory requirements.
A fisherman who was one of the first rescuers at the scene says a survivor told him a sudden wave capsized the boat. A $1 million loan may not be small to you, but apparently it is to Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump. Speaking at a town hall meeting in New Hampshire, Trump said he got his start in business with a small $1 million loan from his father. Trump said he had to pay his father back with interest and that it hasn't been easy for him. And a biscuit that survived the sinking of the Titanic has been purchased by a collector in Greece for $23,000. The biscuit was part of a collection from James and Mabel Fenwick, newlyweds who were beginning a three-month honeymoon trip to Europe in 1912 aboard the SS Carpathia, the ship that ended up rescuing survivors of the Titanic.
Just to be clear, this is a 103-year-old biscuit. I don't think they get better with wine.
I bet they're good. I bet that's wonderful to eat.
6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
In 2001, Vonage revolutionized home phone service, making it better. After such a colossal breakthrough, who would have objected if Vonage said, "Enjoy better, world. Vonage will be at the spa." But today, Vonage is not at the spa having its trouble area worked on, but transforming communications for your business with award-winning cloud-based solutions. See how your business can get the better it deserves. Call 1-800-5-VONAGE or go to Vonage.com. Vonage, the business of better.
Here's the payoff pitch from Familia to Fowler on the way. And it's in there, strike three called. The Mets win the pennant. The New York Mets have won the National League pennant. Put it in the books.
Game one of the World Series tonight, Mets and Royals in Kansas City. When all said and done, how do the champions determine who should get a World Series ring? Clubs make the call for their combined use of nearly 100 players this season, but it's also possible to get two World Series rings in the same year. Good story from the Associated Press about Benji Molina and Arthur Rhodes, who've left little to chance in recent years. They played for both teams that made the series in the same year. Molina, pair of sparkly rings for 2010, one for his time with the AL champion Rangers and the other from the series champion Giants. You might recall he began the year as the starting catcher in San Fran before the promotion of rookie Buster Posey. Rhodes began 2011 with Texas, was released August 8th, signed a few days later with the Cards, which beat the Rangers in a seven-game World Series tonight. First pitch from KC this evening, 8:07 on Fox. For Jennifer, I'm Gordon. Thanks for listening to This Morning. You always want to look great, but don't have the time or the patience to go shopping. With Trunk Club, you never have to set foot in the mall again. Trunk Club takes the hassle out of shopping by shipping you a trunk of clothes that fit perfectly and make you look like $1 million with all the new fall styles. At trunkclub.com/morning, all you have to do is answer simple questions about your style, preferences, and size, and then you are assigned an expert stylist. They curate clothes from the best premium brands, and you approve what you like. Just like that, a trunk arrives on your doorstep filled with hand-picked clothes that are perfect for you. Try them on, keep what you like, and easily return what you don't in their prepaid trunk. This is not a subscription service. You only pay for the clothes you keep. No hidden charges, just great clothes. And right now, their entire styling service is free. Even the shipping. You only pay for the clothes you keep. To take advantage, go to trunkclub.com/morning. One more time, that's trunkclub.com/morning for a trunk filled with clothes you'll love wearing. Hey, thanks for listening. If you love our show, we'd love it if you took a few minutes to give us a review on iTunes. And while you're at it, make sure you like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter with the handle @ThisMorningShow.